I saw this quote recently and it stopped me. It said, "Don't forget that you are going to die." Yes, it's confronting, but it's also very clarifying. Most of us know this intellectually, but we don't live like this statement is true. We live like time is endless, like we have all the time in the world to fix the relationship or to slow down or to become, I guess, who we are meant to be. And then midlife arrives. Not with drama, but a quiet crack in the illusion that life is, in fact, not endless. Suddenly the questions appear. Who am I? What actually matters? What will I do with the time that may just stretch out before me? And this is where a midlife awakening begins. And we are thrilled to be joined by the author of such book, Mary-Ann Williamson. Has done a revision of her first book, Midlife Awakening, because it appears she has some new knowledge to share with us, having lived a few more years since she first wrote the book. An awakening implies it's something important, something that means that perhaps we've been asleep at the wheel. Mary-Ann, it is so wonderful to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's certainly a big question. What prompted you in the first place to write Midlife Awakening? What was it that came across your table that you went, oh my gosh, I've got to tune in?
Well, you know, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago that people live as though we're not going to die and we're not thinking about it. I think people are thinking about it. I don't think there's a space that there needs to be, which programs like yours are now providing for the conversation, but people are thinking about it. When I turned 50, I found turning 50 really hard, and that surprised me. And I realized that it was because, wow, my youth is irrevocably over. And I remember at 50, it's like you live in a campsite. I could see death out in the distance. I was hoping it wouldn't be coming in anytime soon, but I could see it way out in the distance. When you turn 60, you feel a bit closer. And turning 70, most people I know who are, I'm sorry, most people I know who are in their 70s, as I am, are aware that it's time to start thinking very seriously about what that means. I had read a quote from Carl Jung many years ago that said, "The failure to deal with the topic of death robs the second half of life of its meaning." Mm-hmm. And because I'm a believer, because I think that life does not end at the physical body, I'm like a lot of people I know. I don't have a problem with death. I have a problem with dying, certain ways to die, physical pain, horror, all of that. But the very idea that the body is just a suit of clothes that we drop, I think those of us who do have a spiritual grounding have a lot of comfort with that. It's the idea that, as it says in the Course in Miracles, physical birth is not a beginning but a continuation. Physical death is not an end but a continuation. At the same time, even believing that, even knowing that, all kinds of difficult things come up. We are no longer young. We don't have the opportunities that we might have had when we were younger. We don't have, I think, for women. It's, you know, we're invisible in ways that we were not when we were younger. That anytime, you know, that starts around the menopausal years, when you have to grieve some things that aren't yours in order to, they are no longer yours, but you have to grieve them in order to receive the things which are yours now. So I think whether it's a book like mine, books like that, podcasts like this, the fact that we're giving ourselves the space just to have the conversation, that's what, I did a retreat just the other day, and there were three of us who were over 50, and then there were three women who were younger. And the woman who was younger, one of the women who was younger, starts describing a certain kind of wild sex, and you could have that and all that. And at one point I said to her, "We've been your age."
We had it.
Thank you. Been there, done that with some of what she was talking about. And it was like, I have noticed that people who are aging are sometimes the people that I want to be talking to, because we understand what each other's going through. And that's, I think, what's needed now is just the space that, can we discuss this? And I think when we do discuss it, it's a whole different story than when we're holding it inside and pretending that it's not happening.
You're right. And that is so fascinating because my parents are in their 70s now. And I think my mum really is living it. But she listens to this podcast and she often says to me, oh, there's things that you talk about that I wish I'd known when I was a bit younger, that I wish I understood. And now I look at her and I think, well, hang on, no, you are really embodying what I'm thinking that my, you know, the next 30 years holds for me. I turn 50 this year and I'm feeling super proud of that. I don't know whether I've just talked myself into this because of this podcast that Amanda and I have been working on for a few years now. We've kind of convinced ourselves that, yes, all this great stuff is coming our way. And then when I do look at my mum and see what she has achieved in the last 30 years, hoping, like you, that in the 70s that she is finding, I guess, peace and reconciliation and still joy. But now at 50, we sort of think, oh, it's all about the purpose. We have to find our purpose. At 70, do you feel like you did when you were 50, that it had to be about purpose, or is it really just about finding, I guess, is meaning and purpose a different thing, I suppose, is the question that I'm looking for now.
They are the same thing. I mm-hmm. as a Course in Miracles student, this whole new trendy purpose conversation doesn't do much for me. We all have the same purpose. Every person has the same purpose, and you have the same purpose at the age of 25 as at 85, and that's to love, to be a vessel of love, to be the faucet for that water, to be the lamp for that electricity. And if you're waiting for your purpose to be shown to you, I haven't figured out my purpose, you'll never really find it because you're missing that moment. The moment our purpose, like my purpose, I can tell you what my purpose is. I figured out my purpose. You want to know what my purpose is?
Yes.
To do my best on this podcast. There isn't anything else. It's showing up where you are, knowing that by definition, where you are is divine assignment. The person that is in front of you, the encounter is a perfect invitation to be better than ever. It's also a temptation to fall into old dysfunctional patterns. That's your purpose, to grow, to evolve. And the only way to grow and to evolve in love is to show up for love in any given instant. So it's a real trick of the mind to tempt us to believe that our purpose is different than anyone else's. Now, I do understand where the yearning for a sense of purpose comes from, because it represents an awakening from the delusion that just, you know, enough economic or capitalist activity or getting the house or whatever, that would be enough. But I think the slippery slope is when you think your purpose is any different than anyone else's and that it's in anything other than showing up in this moment.
I think that's beautiful, that every single moment is a chance to do the right thing or start again or come into your purpose or meaning. You know, you sort of think sometimes it's like, oh, well, tomorrow I'll do better. But ultimately, I can do better now than I did 30 seconds ago.
Well, we program the future and the present. And also, if you do believe, as the Course in Miracles says, that each of us has a highly individualized curriculum, some of the things that the world might not think were a big deal are a very big deal. I had a text exchange last night. It wasn't perfect. And I think, well, why wasn't it perfect? What was my part? Well, there was that one part when you said that about him. Well, that was an attack on him. She wouldn't have responded well to that. It was all there. Or something else. Oh, my daughter called me today. How you handle a conversation with your children. We have this grandiose idea of purpose in the world. The purpose is to become the woman that you're capable of becoming. And the only way that we can work on becoming the people that we are capable of becoming is by being the people we're capable of being moment after moment after moment. And, you know, so much is going on in the world. One of your purpose is to show up for this. As a conscious person, I think one of the mistakes that the higher consciousness community has made is it's actually contributed to what I think of as a kind of pathological self-reference. Like it's all about me. There's an our purpose here too, not just my purpose, but our purpose. And working through all this and showing up for life. When you do, the older we are, you know, no matter how old you are, your purpose is to give birth to a more beautiful world. And the species can't survive if there aren't enough young people showing up for that purpose, you know, sexually, biologically. But if there's not more wisdom, then children who are born won't survive. We desperately need more wisdom more than we need more babies. And those of us who are older, like when your mother said she knew, she wished she had known, I think we all have that. You know, it's very typical. I mean, if only. But what she knows now and what she can contribute now, we know things. I often say to young women, you don't you have something I don't have anymore, but I have something you don't have yet. You know, every generation, the Talmud says that every generation has its own wisdom. So I think there's a maturity factor that it's our purpose to, you know, it's our purpose now to be wise women elders. That's our purpose.
A quick pause for anyone interested in joining our DNA testing program in partnership with FitGenes, a world-leading genetics company. So many of you have already joined our FitGenes community. So now, for anyone who hasn't, it's your turn. Get to know your genes with us. When you know your genes and your unique genetic breaks, you can do something about it. For us here at the Aging Project, we've learned it's the best first step in our aging well journey. If you'd like to learn more, visit theagingproject.com and join the Fit Genes waitlist. We'll send you all the details so you can get started.
So why does this start around 50? While we're going through perimenopause, reaching menopause, we do have this awakening, but we also have this, some of us are shrinking, I suppose. We lose our spark, and yet we're trying to encourage everyone here to know that the best is yet to come. Why do these things coincide, do you think?
Well, the undertow is there. First of all, nature doesn't care anymore. Before menopause, nature has an investment in a woman being sexy. Nature wants to increase the probability that men will want to have sex with you in order to procreate. So nature, for its sake, makes sure your skin is more, you know, more shiny and voluptuous and your breasts are higher and your, you know, everything's perky. And after menopause, the nature couldn't care less if you ever have sex again.
So she's busy doing other things.
Men, in addition to that, there are all these cultural attitudes. She's over the hill. Right. So there's an undertow. And after menopause, I mean, you have to make a decision. It has to be a decision because nature's not going to support you the way it used to. The societal attitudes aren't necessarily going to support you the way you do. And that's what we're all doing here. We're co-creating the experience. And certainly that's what that book is about. But we have to decide. Now, you just said something also. The best is yet to come. No, the best is happening right now if you are willing to look at what's happening and be grateful for it. Like I record the Course in Miracles, and today when I was getting ready to do it, I just realized how fortunate I am that people would want to hear that, especially when you've been around as long as I. So we have to cultivate the habits of appreciation and gratitude and recognition of what is happening right now. Because futurizing, the ego mind wants to concentrate on the past and the future. Because the ego doesn't want us to dwell fully in the present, which is the only place where God's time intersects linear time. So it's about developing the musculature. And I think as we get older, listen, I have close friends who have died. I have close friends who are critically ill. Something that happens, and your mother certainly could tell you this, probably has, you realize that any given day you're not ill is really wonderful because you see it happening and you have a greater appreciation. You know, at first you're like, oh, my body's not, it doesn't look the way it used to or whatever. And I remember say this to my father, be grateful to your body. Look what it's taken you through. Just everything is more appreciative. Like walking down the street, I never thought about walking. when I was younger. Now I realize, wow, I need to walk and my body needs to walk. It's appreciation. And it's just, it's all on the mind. It's all on the mind.
And if you're checking back in with that, as you say, every minute, just appreciating every minute and living in the moment and being the best you can be in the moment, well, that's ageless, really, isn't it?
Not only that, but when you say the best you can be, the best you can be is infinitely good. The best you can be is infinitely powerful. The best you can be is a really good parent. The best you can be is a really good grandparent. The best you can be is a really good spouse. The best you can be is a really good friend. The best you can be is well-read. The best you can be really understands art. The best you can be shows up for your country. You know, we have like, just be the best you can be. I mean, we got to rise up here.
We got to be better than the best.
Well, it's just that we have to realize that there's no ceiling.
Mm.
You know, it's a decision.
It is a decision, isn't it? And it's a time for that now, as you say. There's so much going on in the world that it seems very overwhelming at times. There's so much going on in our own homes that, as you say, we know that we need to be more present for. And even this morning, it was my daughter's first day back at school, and I forgot to take the photo, you know, of them in their uniform on the first day of the year. And they said, oh, don't worry about it. No big deal. We'll get it this afternoon. And for me, that was that moment of, oh, I had so many other things going on in my head about what was coming up for the day that I wasn't in the present of what I wanted to do for that moment. Again, not a huge deal. And I think we come across these little things every day that we go, oh, well, look, that slipped through. If you can let them go and move forward, and I will get the photo this afternoon and it will be fine. But those little moments, if you're not in the present, you're going to miss them, aren't you?
Well, not only that, I think when it comes to motherhood and also grandmotherhood, if you can't pick it up where you left off. You know, you and I could be girlfriends who haven't seen each other for 2 or 3 years. Hi! And it's like we pick up where we left off. If you don't foster the bond with a child at 4, you can't pick it up at 7. If you don't foster it at 12, you definitely can't pick it up at 15. So I think that we have really allowed a kind of faux aspect of feminism to tempt us to underestimate, when I look at my daughters growing up, if you had said to me, Marianne, do you underappreciate being a mother? Oh no, I don't appreciate it. I think it's the most important thing in my life, blah, blah, blah. But when I look at the life I actually led, somebody said something really interesting to me at a retreat I did the other day. She said she was, when her son was young, she was at the computer and he said, Barbara, Barbara. And she said, Barbara, why are you calling me mom? He said, because you only answer when somebody calls you Barbara. You don't answer when I say mom.
That sticks, doesn't it?
A lot of us have had those moments. So yeah. I don't think there's any greater message for us in our aging years. A more important message in reminding women who have children growing up in the house to be as present as you can possibly be. Even when you say a woman is looking for her purpose, when I hear a woman who has young children saying she's looking for her purpose, what greater purpose could you possibly have? What could possibly be more important? Now, that doesn't mean you don't do other things, write books, have a podcast, have a business. All that's wonderful. But I don't know what glory could come into your life, possibly more important than children and grandchildren.
A quick pause in today's episode to share some of my must-try products at youmusttryit.com. Through the Aging Project, I've learned managing stress is something to be intentional about, which is why over at youmusttryit.com, we've created a stress and sleep page with all of our favorite products. After today's episode, go check out the Shakti mat. This is an acupressure mat with over 6,000 spikes. Yes, I swear by it, as do so many of our customers. Even previous guest, Dr. Peter Wright from the Vera Wellness Clinic said, "I love this mat, Shelley. Thank you. It is my pleasure, Dr. Peter." To grab yours, just go to youmusttryit.com and type Shakti. That's S-H-A-K-T-I. You'll also find essential oils, supplements, and organic teas, all designed to reduce stress and aid sleep. Trust me, all are a must try. Just go to youmusttryit.com for a 10% discount off your first order and to join our community.
Would you do things differently? Obviously, you've now had moments of reflection and greater wisdom than you had in your 50s. If there was a choice, would you go back and do it differently, or do you see it as just
the
learnings of life?
No, absolutely, I would do some things differently. And you know, being someone who has written books and spoken about A Course in Miracles for over 40 years, the mistakes I made were things that I should have known better. Let's say a decision I made that if I just spent the weekend thinking about it, I would have made another decision. Well, mm-hmm. I hope people should know you go pray about something and reflect before you make the decision. Things like that. That I see, I mean, I've always, you know, joked that my life works pretty well when I practice what I preach. I've certainly tried and I understand that. But I also understand that life is complicated. Truth is simple, but life is complicated. So do I have regrets? I don't think there's anybody who gets to a certain age and doesn't have regrets and remorse. And I don't know about remorse, because you don't have remorse if you've cleared things, apologized, atoned. But regrets, absolutely. And part of that that's really difficult as you get older is that when you're 50, like you said, you're turning 50, there's so many things you can still redo. You know, in your 70s, you can't. Now, I will say this, from a spiritual perspective, the universe is infinitely creative. So that doesn't mean you won't have opportunities and that life can't be amazing. But it won't be the same opportunities. So, yeah, there are ways that I wish I had done life differently, absolutely. And once again, that's why it's cool to be with people your age, because they understand that. You know, younger people don't really understand viscerally what that means yet, but older people like, yeah. And then you get it.
Well,
you get a tear or two and you talk about it and you move on and the next wonderful thing is available.
But that's it. You're right. Age gives you the freedom to know what you know and own what you don't and say what you know without caring who does or who doesn't agree.
That's, you know, when I turned 50, I'm sorry.
No, please.
Well, when I turned 50, a friend of mine said to me, and it was so true, she said, at 50, you don't care what other people think anymore. By 70, you really don't care. Like, whatever.
Does that feel like freedom?
That part, yeah. A lot of being older feels like freedom. I was looking at myself in the mirror 2 hours ago, and I noticed something's changing. I really, when you get older and there is thickness around your midsection that you didn't used to have, it's not just that there's thickness there. It's that I know for myself, when I allowed myself to indulge too much in food during COVID, I did so telling myself, well, I know what to do to take it off. But I'd reached an age where the things I used to have to do to take it off don't work anymore. And I noticed just this evening, I looked in the mirror and I had a level of acceptance that I thought, that's interesting. Why didn't I have that dessert last week? I didn't. I just,
Nick.
Me now, you know.
There it is.
Yeah.
No. Okay, I think that can be a little unsettling for people. Again, if you've always been a people pleaser or an A-type, trying to get everything right, and suddenly you get to an age where
I guess, that freedom because your children are no longer dependent on you, or your job is either coming a lot easier or you've decided to step away from that. That freedom can be a little unsettling before it becomes empowering.
I don't know. I don't know how to answer that one, actually. Freedom to know,
like I've got all this time on my hands. I can do and be whatever I want to be, and I guess when you're younger, those questions are exciting because the opportunity is there.
I mean, if you are privileged enough that you can retire and just hang out, I mean, most women I know who are older are just as busy as they were when they were younger, and the difficulty is that it's not as easy to have a lot to do. Yesterday, I had an acupuncture treatment, and when I left, I felt 10 years younger because your body does slow down. So you just have to recalibrate as you age. Different things that can matter, reading a book, going to a museum, really looking at the art. You know, sometimes what you get to do when things are slower, you're still very busy, but you're able to enter into the depth of an experience. You know, isn't it interesting the way, you know, when you have a little child, read to me, will you read a book to me? And it's like, if I have to read about the bunnies one more time. But when you're a grandmother, it like fits my nervous system perfect to say, there's mommy bunny. And there's daddy bunny, and there's sister bunny. Actually, that's a perfect pace for me now. Isn't that the way grandparents and grandchildren's like nature is so perfect that way.
It is perfect. And you're right. Maybe we've just stuffed it up, particularly in the Western world, that we don't have those intergenerational homes so much anymore. And so women in their 30s and 40s are trying to, in inverted commas, and I say it very lightly, trying to do it all. And yet if you had grandma or grandpa available when your kids were little and you were comfortable in allowing them time to grandparent and perhaps, you know, play a larger role in that and not get defensive when they parent the way they parented you because you're trying to do it differently, perhaps we've really cocked it up in that regard.
I don't know if you're going through it in Australia, but in the United States, this family estrangement thing is a huge wound on our society. You're going through that in Australia as well?
Yeah, I think so. There's probably many families from different religious backgrounds or ethnic backgrounds that perhaps have more of that intergenerational life. But as a, you know, a Western girl who's lived in, you know, Australia her whole life. Yeah.
No, this is a specific thing of younger people rejecting their parents. This is a very specific cutting off contact. It's terrible because I think nature did design it. The universe to be intergenerational. And I think it is greatly to the benefit of children to have grandparents who are active and meaningful. And, you know, it's what they always say, you know, I don't have to worry. Like, you know, it's interesting. And I talked to my daughter's mother-in-law. She calls it granny gazing. I said to her when the children were born, I said, I just look at them all the time. I don't remember doing that when they were born, when mine were born. And it was born. And she said, that's because when you have a baby, you're so busy and you have to worry about every little thing. When you're a grandparent, you get to just sit there and adore them. But I think the feeling of children being so adored by grandparents as well as parents is a big deal. And I see very sad things. And I'm always so grateful. My daughter called me today and I was like a teenager with a boy called us. She called, she just wants to talk. She just wants to talk. She didn't even have the kids with her. Oh my God.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful. So do you now, I mean, you make yourself as available as possible for those moments?
Pardon?
You make yourself as available as possible for those moments or for your grandchildren?
I'm trying to. I will say this. Am I achieving that all the time? No. Am I calling myself on it when I'm not? Yes. I'm about to take a trip on my way to see you in Australia. And then I'm going to Australia. I'm going to Abu Dhabi. Then I'm going to New Delhi. Then I'm going to Australia. Then I'm going to Los Angeles. Then I'm going to Chicago. Then I'm going to North Carolina. Then I'm going to Florida, and then hopefully back to England. Okay. Now, option A or option B? Option A. Oh my God, how am I going to pack? How am I going to get all the stuff out of the apartment here? And how many airports is that? And how tiring will it be? That's option A. Option B. Wow. Think of all the people I'm going to meet that I don't know. Think of all the things I'm going to see that I've never seen. But you have to work it. So I've noticed that I'm like, ugh. And I'm like, Marianne, some people would be so excited about this. Come on, snap to it. So I'm in the process. I'm not all there yet, but I'm in the process.
Well, once you sit on that first flight, maybe once you have packed up the apartment and you've left the door, maybe then you can give yourself those moments of joy and excitement. Yeah.
But if I get there, it'll help me to do the packing. I'll tell you a story. You want to hear a story that relates to all this?
100%.
I was on a trip in Brazil, and it was a trip on the Amazon. And most of the women on this trip, I would say that their average age was maybe 30, and their average height was maybe 5'8". Their average body was something like a Victoria's Secret model. And they must have all had a lot of money because they were dressed like Vogue magazine in the Amazon. Now, at first, and they were all very nice. This was not about not being nice. Everybody was very lovely. And at first, it was like, this is why I didn't want to live in LA. You know, it's difficult to age in certain places, you know? So, but I was appreciative and everything was fine. After about 5 days, I noticed that it really got to me emotionally. And I had bought this dress for the last night. I noticed I was too embarrassed. I wasn't even going to wear it. I never did, never took it out. And I started getting, I saw myself spiraling down. Oh, I'm old. And of course, every woman I know my age has had the experience of looking at a picture of herself when she's 25 or 30 and going, I thought that was inadequate. That's what's sad, that younger women don't allow themselves to enjoy being young. Enjoy it. When people say, what's your advice to younger people? My advice is enjoy it. Because you can't really imagine this not being there someday, but it won't be there someday. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I said a little prayer. You know, it wasn't a specific prayer, but it was the metaphysical idea is that everything you need is right in front of you, but your hands in front of your eyes. You're complaining it's dark in here because your hands in front of your eyes. Everything you need is either right in front of you or on the way. So I said to myself, I don't even know how to dress at my age. I don't know how to do it. I want to be Helen Mirren. I don't want to be somebody pathetic. And and I just really got down. So I go to Buenos Aires after Brazil. It's maybe 2 or 3 days later. And I'm doing a TV interview and all these people come in, these younger people, and they keep saying, okay, well, we'll make that decision when Elena gets here. We'll make that decision when Elena gets here. We'll make that decision when Elena gets here. So obviously the big mojo here is Elena. Finally, the doors open and this woman walks in. And she's such a queen, and she's obviously the boss lady, and she's dressed so magnificently, and she looks so magnificent, and guess what? She looked my age. And I thought,
and you said, Elena, and we're going shopping.
I studied every, and this was interesting too, I studied everything she had on, and there wasn't any one piece that she had. Well, I have boots like that, or I have a skirt like that, or I could put a little brooch on a collar. I could put a brace. It's just that she had bravery and courage and joie de vivre. That's what I'd lost. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just getting older. I mean, I saw in her a woman who was aging and has just as much glamour and elegance and even a sexual vibe going on. So that taught me it's what the Course in Miracles says, only what you are not giving can be lacking in any situation. So since I've met Elena, I've tried to be braver. And I tell myself, if we need new clothes, it's you need to pay some attention. Don't be lazy.
Does she know that she inspired Marianne Williamson?
And then when I tell the story,
feel better?
on a radio talk show without saying her name, and everybody knew who I was talking about because she's apparently quite well known. She's the grand dame of Buenos Aires and all the, you know.
How fabulous. How fabulous that, A, she came into your sphere. Extraordinary that you would feel inadequate in and around anybody, Marianne. That is a shock and a surprise to me, but you can always be inspired.
No, it's the stuff you're talking about as we age, you know. It's what your audience knows. It's, you know, it's tough to... I can handle one young, gorgeous woman. I can handle 10 young, gorgeous women, but being on a boat with like 100 of them for 5 days, and I was like...
It's going to wear you down. It is. You mentioned prayer, and obviously you have a very strong spiritual connection. For women who didn't grow up with that or feel a little awkward about it, what does prayer mean to you, and how often... do you do it? You said you didn't do a specific prayer. It was just asking for a little bit of guidance. Is it something that you do, you know, more regularly now?
The Course in Miracles says that the highest level of prayer is not an entreaty of any kind. It's a communion with something larger than yourself. You know, I like how in Alcoholics Anonymous, they say God as you understand him. Mm-hmm. Willingness to believe that there is some kind of higher power bigger than you, some mysterious order to the universe. Doesn't matter what you name it, but a willingness to be open to a life that is bigger than this, and knowing that it is love, and knowing that in any moment that we try to give more love, to forgive, to lighten up about, you know, like I went through something just the last couple of days, and I said, come on, Marianne, don't, you know, you're being, in that wonderful book, The Four Agreements, when he says, don't take things personally, just rise above. Hmm. Try to live on that level where everybody's trying their best. Be more merciful, be kinder. Atone for your own mistakes, take responsibility for your own mistakes. And I think that's particularly important because, once again, you know, I'm living in the United States where there are some people whose behavior is truly unacceptable. And we're going to have to deal with that. And we don't quite know how. So we're really living through a crisis in American democracy. But I notice, and I said to my assistant 2 days ago, we were snapping at each other a little bit. And I said, let's not do this. This is a moment we all have to really be together. We're doing this little snarkiness when you've got fascism over here. No, everybody just, let's all be kinder, more merciful. And I was talking to a friend today about this whole family estrangement. Given what's happening in the United States, this is not the time for families to be estranged. We have to be cohesive. So there's a lot going on in all of our lives. And if we really show up for what's going on right now, right in front of you, there's your purpose.
You write so powerfully about women becoming elders, not fading away, becoming more essential. And as you speak about the situation in the United States and how you feel living there is a whole generation of women like yourself there. Are you encouraging them all to stand up? You've lived through so many evolutions of American politics and lifestyle. Is it time for your generation to become the voice, strongest voice?
My generation, the boomers, when you see a lot of the people who are out there at these protests, they are boomers. We were the 60s generation. We already have ingrained in us. So, no, I don't have to, they don't need my, you know, we need to all encourage each other. But the boomer generation is not the one that's sitting this out. You know, when you look in Minnesota right now, down in the 20 degree Fahrenheit weather, 19 or below zero, you see a lot of people who are not young out there. It's counterintuitive, and you could talk to your mom about that. So it's counterintuitive because when you think of all the dangers in the world today and some of the stresses and things that are really serious threats to human evolution over the next 100 years, you'd think that once you get a certain age, you would go, it'll probably not all fall apart before that. I'll probably make it, but, you know. But you actually get more radical because your kids will be alive. Your grandkids will be alive. They deserve a chance to live on this earth. So, no, I don't think, I think older people just need to be reminded, get up. We need to stop coddling ourselves. Enough with the, I'm so traumatized. I'm so wounded. Yeah, we all are. Cry. I always say pray in the morning, kick ass in the afternoon.
You know, I need to get a That is a great t-shirt.
Cry when you have to, cry when you have to, then get up, take a shower, get dressed, because we're going to the protest or we're going to the make a difference in whatever we're making a difference. We have to all encourage each other. But we all want that. We all want to feel useful. I don't care if you're 20 or 80, you want to feel useful.
Mm. So what do you think true elderhood looks like today?
You know, it's so interesting because I have thought a lot in the last year or two about something I never in my life would have thought that I would be thinking about, my great aunts. And I think about them now. They would come, like, let's say they were coming to my grandmother's for dinner, and all they're doing is going to Rose's for dinner. They're dressed, they have jewelry on, their hair is done nice. There was no schlumping. They were, however old they were dressed. And you know what they were doing? They were asking, like, the grandkids and the nieces and the nephews in college, what are you studying? How are you? Tell me about, have you met someone? I had no idea how important it was that older people were asking me those questions until I met people where nobody gave a damn, ever asked a question, ever cared. And I realized how bolstered I was in becoming an adult that there were people who wanted to know, have you met anybody? What are you studying? Do you have a lot of friends? You know, to me, that's elderhood, just showing you care. Asking, I did a retreat the other day, and there was a woman saying she'd had a very terrible childhood. And we asked her what was terrible. And her mother was very negative and was always putting her down. Then we went around the circle. God needed her to see this. Every woman there, her stories were so horrific. So, like Victor Hugo said, every time you meet someone, know you're in the presence of a great war. Everybody needs some kindness. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs just somebody to say, how are you doing? What's going on? Mm-hmm. To develop that, we've all been so trained. It's about me. It's about me. And then we wonder where love is. So to me, that's what elderhood is. To be the presence in the room of someone who cares and knows how hard it is and tends to people.
That is absolutely going to change my outlook on life, on my role in life, my purpose, my meaning. And every time you step into a room or step out of a room or meet eyes with someone or take a moment, there is an opportunity to A, find that purpose and meaning every day. It's not too late. You're not too old. You are right on time, Marianne.
To do with age, your capacity to open your heart, to love, to be sensitive, to be kind, to those are the things that matter. They have nothing to do with your age. And sometimes you're far more prepared to be sensitive when you're older, because when you're younger, you're too wrapped up in what's going to happen to me. When you're older, that wasn't happening. You're going to die more sooner than not. So you may as well just be here now.
What a great note to leave this interview on. We've had so much beautiful wisdom throughout, but ultimately just
said to me at a business
get into life and enjoy it.
Somebody said to me at a business meeting the other day, someone on my team, there was a questionnaire for the branding or whatever. Where do you want to see the business in 5 years? And I'm like, I'm 73. It's not the It would be nice if I'm alive, if I can hear, if I can.
I'm not asking too much, am I? Oh, Marianne. We are so grateful that you made yourself available for our conversation today. I know there was so much wonder and beauty and knowledge in there for all ages, not just those of us coming into midlife and feeling like it is the end of the world. For those who are past midlife and hopefully are embracing it the way that you are. And if they're not, well, today is the day to start. Life is certainly something to rise into, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I look forward to having that conversation in Australia, seeing you and meeting you in person. And The Course in Miracles says an idea grows stronger when it is shared. So let's share the love, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we are lucky enough to have Marianne on our shores very, very soon. She'll be in Brisbane Sunday the 22nd of February. She's heading to Melbourne Wednesday the 25th of February and Sydney Thursday the 26th. It is a tight stop on your world tour, Marianne, but we're so grateful that you've included Australia in that and we can't wait to see you there.
Thank you so much. All my best.
Thank you. All the details for where you can get tickets and where you can see Marianne Williamson live in conversation, check out our show notes and we'll also have them on our website. And of course, all the details will be there ready to go. Thank you so much again. We'll see you soon. As always, the Aging Project podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes. Always seek medical advice from a qualified practitioner.